This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. This week, we're going to take a snapshot of the campaign trail for South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg as he seeks the Democratic presidential nomination. On July 7th, Buttigieg appeared at the Essence Festival in New Orleans. The initial questioner is Reverend Al Sharpton.
As we go to the panel, the last thing I want to bring up is that I took you to Sylvia's Soul Food Restaurant in Harlem. And one of the reasons I wanted to is to openly deal with the fact that we have to deal with the remnants of homophobia still in our community and in this nation. You have said from day one you're openly gay and married. And I've said whether people agree with your life or not, they have to judge you on the merits of your service, just like we want to be judged on the merits of ours. And as you are here at Essence Festival, this festival has always been one to openly welcome all of our community, whether they are women, men, gay, LGBTQ, transgender, because it's all one family. And I thought it was very important that you be here so people would understand that those that are still homophobic in our community do not speak for the majority of our community. Even the faith community, we can understand wherever we fight for civil rights for anybody, we fight for it for everybody.
Thank you.
Have you had to deal with any homophobia during your campaign?
Yes, of course. There's some ugliness out there. But the most important thing for me is to make sure that because I know something about one kind of exclusion, it's not the same. I don't know anything about what it's like personally to be a trans woman of color, for example, or what it is to be a woman in the workplace, or what it is to drive while black. That's not my experience. But because I know a little bit about exclusion, I also have, I think, something I can tap into to motivate me to look after others. My marriage exists by the most important thing in my life, my marriage, something that has moved me closer to God, exists by the grace of a single vote on the U.S. Supreme Court. And I know that that is there because people fought for me. It's one of the things that motivates me to fight twice as hard for women's reproductive rights, knowing that I am not a woman. That motivates me to find a voice to have the conversations that white America needs to have with itself on the issue of race because I am not a person of color. Because I know so many people were there for me before I was even born and all through my life.
Essence Communication in this technological age has more than kept up with the times, so they've done a survey. They do 25,000 kind of views, opinions, and they really read them and study them. And from the survey, I'm going to have the leadership ask you questions. Michelle Ebanks, who's our CEO, has been fighting with losing her voice over the last couple of days. It came back strong yesterday, got weak again late last night. I think she was screaming when Michelle Obama was speaking, so it got a relapse. But she was here today because Rich Lou and I refused to go on the stage without the Queen. We'd rather have Michelle hoarse than a lot of folks loud. So give a hand, Michelle Ebanks. Can you whisper into the mic?
Rev, I'm gonna give this an Essence try.
All right.
How about that? We know now that the candidates understand more of our statistics, that we are underpaid, underpromoted, underinvested in, undercared for in hospitals. So we understand more about our statistics. How will you be held accountable to black women with your agenda?
So step one is transparency, I believe, because what we know about things like women and black women in particular being underpaid is there's a lot of accountability when that comes to the light. So I am proposing that employers be required to publish gender pay gaps that are going on in their organizations. And I think that'll provide a powerful motivator for people to do that job right. I expect to be held accountable for whether my administration models the diversity that all of the candidates are talking about right now. We're seeking to do it in our campaign. We're very proud of the campaign team we're building. In the city administration that we built, even facing the fact that in areas like law enforcement recruiting, we still got a ways to go. I expect to be held accountable for how diverse our administration's top appointments are, because personnel is policy, and things change very quickly when you have different kinds of people in charge. But also, this is, I think we need to make sure the conversation doesn't go down the false road of making it sound like this is about doing people a favor. This is, number one, about equality. And number two, this pays back to the entire country. The wealth that is being created, for example, through the leadership of women entrepreneurs, the wealth that is being brought to New Orleans right now by what you are doing, is an example of how that empowerment makes everybody better off. And we have got to recognize that and invest in that. See, it turned out it was not true that a rising tide lifts all boats. We've been told that, and the experience across my entire lifetime is doesn't work that way, because we've seen the rising tide rise, and we've seen in so many of the outcomes that you mentioned, from racial disparities in health outcomes to life expectancy to income to the wealth gap that we are wrestling with, that it is not true. And in particular, women have been excluded, Black Americans have been excluded, and of course, Black women have carried that burden doubly. So it's not true that the rising tide lifts all boats. But what is true is that when you untie some of those boats that have been roped down to the ocean floor, everybody's better off, even those who were not part of that pattern of exclusion. And so I think it's imperative for our country to advance that we actually make good on this. And I invite people to look in more detail than we can probably do today at the elements of our Douglas plan, which covers not just criminal justice reform, which is so important, but home ownership, health, education, and entrepreneurship. Because we cannot talk as if the Black experience can be reduced to criminal justice when there are so many other things that are happening that are so important too. And all of it rests on the foundation of an expanded access to democracy, making sure everybody can actually vote and that those votes are counted. And that's why we're leading with that issue.
David Blight just won a Pulitzer Prize writing a book on Frederick Douglass. You came with a Frederick Douglass plan. When I think of Rich Lou Dennis, I think of Frederick Douglass, because what people don't know is, other than him being a leading abolitionist, he started a communications business, took it over, North Star, invested in it, and then went to Washington and mixed it with the Freedmen's Bank. And Rich Lou is in the same vein of Douglass, of mixing communication and business development. So in many ways, you have come with a Douglass plan. I brought you to 21st century Douglass, Rich Lou Dennis.
Good morning, Mayor. You know, economics is the single most transformative idea that we can bring to our community. Because with that idea, we can bring the freedom to do the things that we deserve to be able to do. Home ownership, automobile ownership, education, vacations, coming to festival, doing all the things that enrich our lives, but also the basics that take care of our children and our families. How do you start to lay the foundations through your policies and through your actions that encourage entrepreneurship beyond the rhetoric? Because we hear it a lot, right? And there's these plans, we're gonna invest this, we're gonna do that. But what are going to be the things that you're going to do that is going to systemically remove those barriers that inhibit entrepreneurship in our communities?
Well, one of the biggest things we know is an issue is access to capital. And we have got to reform a credit system that restricts access to capital for so many would-be entrepreneurs without actually doing a good job of assessing how creditworthy they are. So we know that scoring needs to change. We know the administration of these algorithms needs to change. And by the way, one of the big issues we got to face as technology grows in our lives is to make sure technology doesn't wind up automating the biases that have already been in people's minds. Because an equation can discriminate just as much as a loan officer can. And we've got to write the right equations. So that's a big piece of it. A big piece of it is making sure people have the freedom to take a risk. You know, part of the experience of being excluded is you need a certain level of security to go off and start that small business. This is why healthcare is so important. If you're afraid to start a small business because you can't leave your old job, even though it doesn't pay enough because you're clinging to those health benefits, then that diminishes your opportunity to go create opportunities for yourself and others. It's why we need universal healthcare in this country. And when it comes specifically to wealth building in the Black community, it is why I also believe, just from the perspective of access to capital, that we do need to have this conversation about reparations. Even while not everybody understands where it's going to lead, we at least need to have H.R. 40 set up that commission. And from an entrepreneurship perspective, the most important thing I think the debate misses is this. There's this talk, well, we're talking about long ago, far off sins from a different generation. We should, you know, those are in the past. But if you think about, as anybody who started a business or anybody who's ever borrowed a dollar knows, you think about how interest and the value of money compounds, right? You have a dollar today. Next year, it's $1.05. Pretty soon, it's $2. After 100 years, it's $100. Well, that's true of a dollar invested. That's also true of a dollar stolen, which means the fact that some of this generational theft of wealth happened a long time ago doesn't make it better. It makes it worse. And so I don't claim to have fully figured out how we redress that, but what I know is that this conversation needs to be brought forward, that H.R. 40 should be passed, and I will sign it, and that that has got to be part of the equation on how we build the wealth that makes it possible for entrepreneurs to step forward. And again, when they do, they create opportunities, not just for those who are historically excluded, but for all of us, and we're all better off.
Right. And why is it, in your opinion, why do you think that we haven't had more movement on this issue? Why do you think that as a party, the Democratic Party hasn't done more to lead this into fruition?
I think it's because we have been under the spell of the idea of colorblindness, which may have felt very progressive relative to what came before. But I think we've been under the spell of this idea that if you have a racist policy, and you get rid of it and replace it with a neutral policy, everything else will kind of take care of itself. And it doesn't work that way. That's what we've learned. We've learned that unless you act proactively, intentionally, to reverse harms that were also created intentionally, it's just not going to be enough because these harms compound themselves. And I think, but the other thing that's happening that will help us shift is that we have now the most diverse generation in the history of our party, in the history of our country, and the next one's going to be even more diverse. So an answer that doesn't work is no longer going to be considered good enough. The other thing that I think has held us back is that even now this is being talked about like a black issue. Mm-hmm. And I think it was James Baldwin who said that until white America comes to terms with itself, there will never be resolution to the treatment of black people in this country. Yeah. So now is the time for us as a party to recognize that all of us are diminished, all of us are made worse off, so long as some of us are being systematically oppressed and excluded. And we shouldn't have any illusions about the fact that this is not only a legacy from 400 years ago, this is the consequence of things going on right now as we speak.
As we all know, change doesn't happen in one place, by one person, by one party. We're going to ask that you, the other candidates, the Democratic Party, starts to really focus in on these economic issues, because these economic issues will determine the fate of our community 50 years from now, 100 years from now. But it's also not just us asking and demanding that you and your compatriots and the Democratic Party do this, but also, what advice would you give us in the audience as to how we can participate and help to drive some of this?
Well, the biggest thing is to recognize, as I hope you can tell by the parade of candidates seeking to get on your good side right now, the power that is represented in this room. So to put it really simply, it's use your power. We have seen elections change, outcomes change. I would argue that what happened in the United States House of Representatives, finally getting that into Democratic hands, happened because of voters, activists, and in particular, women of color rising up. And so the power is already there. It has anybody who wishes to seek office wanting to engage. Now, my hope is that you will have candidates who don't only want to win, but want to make sure we deserve to win. But that dialogue, that conversation, and above all, that movement into the polls is what's going to bring about change. And we'll know we're doing well when this is not a partisan issue, when you hear Republicans talking about this just as energetically as Democrats are. And if you want to see that happen, no better way to reunite them with their conscience than for there to be a severe consequence in November 2020 for them at every level for failing to address these issues.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.